Hello and welcome back to Naturally Adventurous with Charlie and Ken. We have now finished our South Africa trip and we've started a sort of mini vacation, just the two of us. So we're hitting the road for, what is it, maybe 3 or 4 days. And we were thinking that we spent quite a long time driving, so why don't we try and record a podcast while we're on the road? So if there's a little bit of ambient noise or road rage, then do forgive us.
Isn't that cyclable strand right there?
Yeah, it is. So we're driving this. We're on the Highveld, up on the sort of big high plateau of eastern South Africa, just south of Joburg. Oh, there's a speed trap, is it? Oh, no, it's a farmer with a walking stick.
He's actually herding cattle. There's a herd of cattle standing literally in the middle of the highway.
Wow. And we've got these beautiful fields full of yellow flowers on the right, and it's quite there's some kind of burnt scenery around us. It's a kind of a bizarre place. We're kind of out of Joburg now, heading.
Is that bald ibis?
No, they're glossies, I think.
Glossy.
Yeah, glossy ibis. Gotta watch out for them though. So, you might, we might be seeing a few birds on the way or shouting at other cars. But anyway, we decided to record a podcast on the road, and we were wondering what to do it on, and we thought maybe we'll just sort of pick a random country that one of us has been to and just kind of chat about it a little bit. So we've decided to do Italy. You haven't been to Italy, right?
I have.
Oh, you have? So we've both been there. So not a major birding destination, but I'm sure we'll come up with a few interesting things to say about the place. What did you do there?
My wife and I actually went to Italy for a couple weeks.
Really?
Just for fun.
A little romantic
holiday. Just to see cultural stuff.
Right.
And mountains a bit, driving around in the Alps. And very kind of spontaneous travel.
It's quite pretty. I mean, it's like so it's shaped like a boot, I guess, a big long boot. And it's like a spine of mountains that kind of comes down the middle of it, isn't there?
So, well, you have the Alps that kind of outline far northern Italy, right?
Yeah.
But then there's that mountain range down the spine. And yeah, I was astounded to realize at some point how tall those mountains are.
Yeah.
They're like 11, 12,000 feet in the middle of the peninsula. So, yeah, it's a pretty rugged country.
Did you go to, where did you start? Were you in Rome or what?
Just started in Milan, made our way over to Florence, and didn't get into real southern or central Italy. It was kind of north,
right,
west. Yeah, a lot of places I'd still like to go.
Sure, yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, when it comes to like the city, the old cities and stuff like that, they're really beautiful places to move around. I mean, it's not a sort of big hotspot for nature or anything, but you said you did a bit of driving around the mountains.
We drove in and out between France and Italy a couple times,
really?
Kind of between the two countries.
Huh.
Drove through mountain passes and kind of skirted Mount Blanc a few times.
Right.
I was just interested to explore the Alps a bit.
I like
mountains. I'm happy to go places that don't have a lot of wildlife. In some ways, it actually can be relaxing.
Not doing that little bird a twitch, like looking over your shoulder every 2 seconds.
Yep. But it's astounding how little wildlife there is in Italy, how few birds you see. It's a remarkably birdless place.
Do you have any ideas about why that would be?
Lots of hunting.
Lots of hunting, yeah.
Yeah.
I found that quite depressing, eh?
Yep.
So I went to Italy to see my sister who lives in Italy. And she's got this little farmhouse and a little piece of land where she's got some horses on. And a few little bushes and stuff, a nice bit of habitat for birds. I was walking around. There was like these old Italian guys just walking around with guns, just blasting anything. It was quite depressing, eh? And it didn't seem to get rid of all the birds, but it made what survived very, very shy and very
skittish. Incredibly shy, right. I mean, I find the baseline of shyness of birds in Europe is incredibly high.
Yeah.
I feel like there's been this huge selective pressure for thousands of years for birds to be afraid of people. And then Italy has just brought that to another level.
Yeah.
Of just blasting everything. It doesn't just flee at the sight of a human.
And I found it quite depressing that, you know, as somebody that really loves birds and loves birding, just to, every time you hear a blast, there's another little cloud of feathers exploding. Yeah, it's and you don't really meet many Italian birders. There are some.
See, I mean, I guess there's some Italian ornithologists. It seems like one of those countries where it's viewed more as like a professional thing than something you do. Like in Britain, it's like everyone's kind of this amateur garden bird watcher. Even South Africa's a bit that way. Like everybody's got
everybody
this
does a little bit
of bush knowledge and knows the commoner birds.
The luri.
Have you seen the luri?
Have you seen the luri? So, the birds are a bit skittish and thin on the ground. But yeah, beautiful scenery. Pretty cool. I might tell you one little story. So, yeah, my sister lives quite near Rome. And not too far from Rome, maybe like a 3-hour drive, maybe even less from where my sister is, maybe only a couple of hours. There's a big national park called Abruzzo. And it appears sometimes on trip reports of like mammal tours and, you know, and there's actually wolves there. There's wolves and bears.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Just not too far from Rome.
Yeah, 3 hours from Rome. It's a huge national park. And I thought, I went to see my sister and, you know, we just hired a car and we thought, let's go and drive up to Abruzzo and look around. So there were, but bears were sort of off the menu because, hibernating, but the wolves were still around. So I thought, you know, we'll drive around a little bit and, you know, keep our fingers crossed for wolves. So we were driving around and yeah, I read a couple of trip reports just to see, and some people had kind of stumbled into them, but it was, you know, it was cold, you know, there was even a little bit of snow on the top of the hills. And, but it was quite scenic. Yeah, a few birds around, and there was a few little villages inside. We had a nice little lunch and had a hike. I think there was even, like, a little 600 meters turn left. Okay.
Got it.
And, yeah, there was, like, a ski lift that went up. And I don't think... there was a little bit of snow. You know what it was? My son actually saw snow for the first time in his life.
Ah.
So he was super excited. He was maybe 4 years old or something. And we went on this ski lift and there was just like a little, maybe like an inch of snow at the top, but just enough to make a very small snowman and have just a very brief snowball fight just to...
You all clear?
Yep.
Merging onto the highway?
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. He was pretty happy about that, and you know, I saw one or two birds. It's cool. You know, one cool thing that I did see up there on top of the hills at a distance was chamois. He's like
big sheep, right?
Yeah, like
sheep,
a little
goat family.
Yeah, and these little, and that's, you know, that's where, you know, chamois leathers.
Yep.
For like really soft leather that you use for polishing cars and windows and stuff. That's where the chamois leathers come from. But I saw a distant group of chamois. And but in the end we didn't see any wolves. But I really would quite like to go back. I think sort of in May or June. I think maybe when the bears come out of hibernation, they can be quite easy to see. They just kind of walk around the hillsides.
And that's foraging. Brown bear. Yeah. It's like the same one that's found over into Russia.
Yeah.
And it's a huge one, right?
It's big. Yeah.
It's like grizzly.
Yeah.
Even, is it even conspecific with grizzly sometimes, depending on your taxonomy?
Yeah, it was Ursus arctos is a species. You know what the subspecies name of grizzly bear is?
What is it?
Ursus arctos horribilis.
Horribilis. Wow.
But I'd quite like to go back and see my sister in the spring once, and maybe have another drive around and see if I can find wolves and bears in Abruzzo. But yeah, kind of cool. What a cool place.
Nice place to have a relative. I mean, it's one thing about Europe. It's by the standards of most of the places you and I go, certainly the places we go on our own, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, sure.
It's hard to... You have to adapt, at the very least, to the cost of everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, the cheapest hotel you can get is sort of 67 euros, that sort of thing.
But, I mean, you know, my sister's living there, so we were staying in her house and cooking at home most of the time. So, you know, and most of it, we just take little local walks and things, so it wasn't really costing as much. We would go to the local supermarket called Eurospin and go buy some cheap food and kind of cook together and stuff. So it wasn't an expensive trip. But we did eat out a few times, went for a nice pizza. It's rather nice.
So what kind of village does she live in?
So she's about an hour north of Rome. The closest train station is called Stimigliano. And then there's a few little... And she's kind of... I think her little village is called Sao Paolo Sabini. And it's just a tiny little village. But it's, you know, she's maybe 10 minutes to the closest little village. And then there's a few other little villages. You know, you drive 10 minutes in any direction and you've got some other stunningly beautiful village that you can stroll around in. And, you know, so it's a very quaint place. Her house is absolutely freezing in winter. It's like a... Yeah, it's like a sort of farmhouse with no insulation.
Huh.
So you're all going to sleep in your clothes. And she had these kind of wood fire heaters that kind of took the edge off a little bit. But it still felt pretty Baltic.
I guess all houses used to be that way. If you went back far,
people used to live in stone houses.
I mean, not like us, you still live that way. Up in the Highlands, it's pretty... It'd be in the 40s Fahrenheit, just above freezing. And, yeah.
You'd all be cuddled up in one big bed trying to keep warm.
Yep.
So, I mean, I was traveling around with my sister, so she would always, you know, order for us, and we didn't have to worry about communication. But how did you get on with communicating when you were traveling around Italy? You find enough English speakers in the tourist areas?
Yeah, there was definitely some English speakers. Italian is pretty easy to understand
when
you speak another couple Romance languages.
Sure.
So I think I don't remember it being much of an issue. Some combination of English and a little Italian and understanding. And people, they're pretty cool about just making communication happen. It's not one of these countries like France, not to name names, but countries where it's not the case. But my wife just loves Italian.
She has what, a good, the language?
The language.
Really?
She has a good friend living in Italy who's part Italian.
Oh.
And so she's always sharing certain Italian phrases with her. She's been studying Italian off and on through the years.
It's a beautiful language.
And it's fun. It's
fun.
It's a really fun language.
You need two hands to speak it, though. You've got it's not one of these, like English, you can just have your hands in your pockets, but... You know, Spanish, you maybe need one hand, but yeah, Italian, you really need two hands to speak the language properly.
Yeah, it's... So, what do you make of the fact that, like, every village in Italy is just so beautiful? Like, what explains that?
I guess it's what the people value. Maybe they value beautiful architecture and quaint little streets and... You know, they see beauty in that and they preserve it, I suppose. You know, they don't see value in protecting birds. You know, they're something to be blasted away. You know?
Yeah, right.
You're going to have a few wines and roam around the countryside inebriated, blasting birds out of hedges. But the buildings and stuff are to be cherished and protected. They like to live... Nicely as well, you know. They like a nice wine and nice food, and they dress nicely, and you know, it's very kind of quite different from
there's
British.
This, oh boy,
it's like very opposite. Yeah,
different from the States too.
Sure,
it's like there's a proper way of doing everything.
Left, I think.
It's like there's a proper way of eating. There's a proper way of building a house. There's a proper way of speaking and drinking. Taking a siesta, and then, like, there's a certain natural order in the world, which definitely involves blasting birds whenever possible. it's quite weird to me. Like, Italy is so rich, like, in beauty, say human-made things.
Yeah.
But people just don't value the natural beauty of like living in a landscape that's enlivened by wild birds, bird song, and just
yeah.
you know, having these characters as part of your life. You know, think of Britain the way every hedgerow has a robin.
Yeah.
Or a dunnock, or...
But the gardens as well, you know, just in your garden, you've got little birds hopping around. And you were saying about this thing of over long periods of time, things become very skittish and, you know, they kind of adjust to being persecuted, like in, you know, in New Guinea or whatever. Lefty, I think.
Or 23.
Yeah. But, so in the UK, you know, they're not persecuted and then they become very tame and friendly and you can see stuff very... close, but like even trying to get a view of a bird in Italy, you know if they pause their shot, so you know you'll see a bird flushing out of a hedge and it's gone, and they're difficult even to get your bins on.
Yeah, to even see, let alone photograph or
yeah.
anything like that. Yeah, it's strange.
But it's I mean my sister's got. You know, lots of Italian friends, and they're just so kind of flamboyant, and they just like to have fun and parties and eat and sing and, you know, just enjoy life, really. It's a nice way of living, I think. Yeah, I do appreciate it.
I think if Italians collectively could make a decision that, like, we're going to live in ugly places, but it's going to add 10% to our GDP...
Right.
Or, you know, we're gonna eat food that's not very tasty or well
yeah.
prepared, but that's gonna add 15% to our GDP.
Yeah.
No way.
They wouldn't do it. No,
it'd be a no-brainer.
It's like, what's the point of living? Yeah.
It feels like in the States and maybe Britain, we've almost made those decisions. Like,
yeah.
Maybe tacitly we just, oh yeah, it's more important to sort of drive the economy than
uh-huh.
just to live in a place that's beautiful or just to always have good, healthy food. Really have to go out of your way to get those things in the States and Britain.
It's an interesting thing with the food. I remember going in and ordering some pasta, and it was like pasta and maybe some olive oil and pepper, and that was it. It's kind of like simple, and they'll just keep it simple because it's nice. And I said, what's in this dish? And they were like, oh, it's spaghetti, and pepper. And there was like, and what else? And there was like, no, only that. I was like, okay. And I ate it, and it was just delicious.
Yeah.
The pasta was just, you know, it was al dente, and just real nice. And yeah, so having nice food, the pizza was just amazing. Nice pasta, just friendly people. Got a raptor on there, or is it a crow?
No, it's Italy. It seems like one of these places where it's almost impossible to get bad food. Like a restaurant that served bad food, it just wouldn't stay in business.
No.
Culture of food is so strong, and I do appreciate, as you said, there's a certain simplicity to Italian food.
Yeah.
Now, I'm speaking from a position of not knowing
about it.
We're
not really.
They're probably, and there's, I know there's like vastly different strains
sure.
within Italian cooking,
yeah.
regional cuisines, and so on. So maybe some of them are quite complicated, but it does seem like a lot of it is pretty simple. Like they rely on just like the wholesomeness, the tastiness
yeah.
of their basic ingredients to make good food.
So my sister has olive trees on her little bit of land that she rents. And they make all her friends come round and they help her make her own olive oil. And they're all kind of stamping it and putting it in little bottles and, you know, and they call it the olio de casa or something. It's like your home olive oil. She put it in little bottles and she gives it to all her family for Christmas presents.
Wow.
And yeah.
It's
really tasty, you know, really strong taste.
You know, you could look at that and you could say, that's ridiculous, because you can go buy good olive oil for, well, if we tally up the time of all the people involved, whatever, you know, the replacement cost is X. But you know what, you can't put a price on just being with people you like,
yeah.
and the fact that it came off of your own land as well.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, she's giving it as a gift to people, and it's like, this actually, you know, this tree grows in my garden.
Yeah.
It'd be a pretty meaningful gift.
Yeah. We had a pizza party once when I was there. I can't remember. They've got this hilarious Italian friend, just totally flamboyant, and me and this other guy, we were trying to start the pizza oven and just putting a few little sticks in there and trying to light a little fire, and he just kind of pushes us like, yeah, no, I need more wood. And he's throwing, and he just fills this whole thing, and he just sets this massive fire and just really gets this place thing cooking, because we were trying to make these little pizzas and they were burning and uncooked, and yeah, it was like, nah. And he said, you've got to really get this thing hot. And then, you know, we were just making pizzas with these Italians and throwing stuff on and putting them in, and one guy brought his accordion and singing, and everybody's drinking wine, and it was just amazing. It was just really pretty cool. Yeah, so my sister and her husband, they're artists. And they, you know, they have this wonderful life where they just paint for a few hours, and they, you know, have a wine at lunch, and yeah, they just they really kind of enjoy. I don't think they work any more than they have to, you know, just to sort of enjoy life. But it's always fun to go and visit.
And so, do they make a living with painting?
Yeah. Wow. You know, they post a lot of stuff to the UK, and they put stuff in different galleries, and. But yeah, they make a living.
Huh. When my wife and I were there, we had some great culinary experiences. The most memorable one was we were in some tiny town. It was very quiet. You know, it's kind of like winter. This was up in the foothills of the Alps. There just wasn't a lot going on. There weren't many restaurants. We finally saw something that seemed to be a restaurant. And we went in. And it was basically like somebody's living room.
Really?
And you know, it actually felt a bit awkward. Like, in the rest of the world, if you find a place like that, you're not going to get very good food. Or, you know, and it feels awkward. It's like you're sitting in somebody's living room. But the hostess or whatever, the owner came out. And she had a menu. And
really?
We ordered. And then she brought out some bread, just as, you know, typically, I guess you get bread with most meals in Italy. It was just the most amazing bread we've ever had. It's like you describe with the simple spaghetti or whatever.
You dip it in a little bit of olive oil.
Of course. It was some kind of whole grain, really hearty, kind of rich brown bread. I mean, I can almost taste it now as I describe it. It was just beautiful.
That's amazing.
It was like we didn't even need any other food.
Yeah.
If we just had a loaf of that bread and some olive oil, that could have been dinner, happily. And it was so... eventually, she brought out the food we'd ordered, and it was just absolutely fantastic.
What did you get?
Just like home-cooked, like literally...
And pasta.
I don't even remember. But at the end of the evening, my wife sort of asked her if we could buy a bit of bread to take away.
Yeah.
And she just gave us a loaf, didn't even charge us. I think she just appreciated how much we appreciated the bread.
So as well as Italy, we managed to check off another independent state, the Vatican City. Yeah. We may at a point count up how many countries we've talked about, so I think it might be a good day.
Are you saving Vatican?
Yeah, well, no, I'll just mention. So we were kind of walking around Rome. So it's actually inside Rome. And then it's just a certain area of Rome. It's you know...
Like a neighborhood.
Yeah. So we went in there. It was quite interesting, eh?
Yeah.
Big, very grand buildings. And all these... what do they call those? The people that... the Swiss Guard.
Oh, there's some ancient relationship where they protect the Vatican.
They send Swiss kind of soldiers to protect the Vatican or something like that. So they... And dressed like... In these, they look like a little, like a clown or some kind of, like some fancy dress, you know, really outlandish costume. And then, you know, I think, you know, the robes that you wear kind of denote your position. It's one of the little bits of trivia about American birds, the prothonotary warbler, you know, that's prothonotorious, whatever. It's like it's one of the clerics in the Vatican, isn't it? It was sort of bright yellow robes, something like that. So
there's a few bird names that I think are
cardinal,
and I think
bishop,
Jacobin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is hearkening to a different age when I guess you actually might have seen these people around wearing these kind of gaudy robes. Did you have the... Was there a passport check when you went into the Vatican?
Oh, God. Maybe, yeah.
People probably want to get a passport stamp.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a stamp or not, but I seem to remember some... No, but actually, no, because, I mean, it's all Europe, so I think everybody... It was all kind of open borders.
It's maybe a Schengen kind of...
Yeah. But, you know, it did seem a bit different, and you could just kind of sense the history. And there was some sort of thing going on in one of the, you know, in the kind of big cathedral there, and it was certainly, you know, you could sense that history and tradition there. You know, I mean, obviously I'm not a religious person by any means, but it was pretty cool.
I imagine the Vatican is a bit like Jerusalem, where I was a few months ago.
Yeah, people turning up and, you know, pilgrimages.
Yeah. Everybody's kind of expecting to have some kind of transcendent experience.
Yeah.
When I think of the Vatican, I always just imagine like vast vaults full of like artifacts ancient books, and who knows what. I'm sure they have these things.
Yeah. But you can imagine the whole square full of people and the Pope coming out and, you know, getting audience. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Yeah, walking around Rome was pretty cool. All the old streets and little shops, and, you know, it was quite a fun thing to do with a family.
Did you see any ancient Roman stuff, Colosseum or anything?
Yeah, we did the Colosseum. Uh-huh. It was funny. My son, I think it was maybe when he was 4, but he was given for his birthday a leather jacket. And it was a very, very cool leather jacket. Like a proper, you know, kids, where people spend a lot of money getting their kids dressed up. But so we had him in this leather jacket, and I think he just had his hair cut. It was almost like a Mohican, and we put like gel in his hair. And we put his like smartest clothes on, and we were all right in. Yeah, we were all kind of like wandering around Rome, like in our best gear, like trying to look cool, dressed in black and shades, and yeah.
What I notice about Italians is that they have a strong sense of style of how they want to look.
Yeah.
And if it's not sort of synced up with what the rest of the world thinks is stylish, they don't care.
No, because they know that they're stylish.
Yep. They look good and everybody else looks bad, and they're just not bothered.
They say style is always in fashion, right?
It certainly seems like a place where people spend a lot of money.
They're a very distinctive nationality, you know, and they do travel, and you can often spot them a mile off, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If they're on the beach, they're the ones in the Speedos, you know. And and they're all very, very chatty and having fun. And, yeah.
It doesn't seem to be a country of great travelers. You don't see a lot of Italians traveling.
They're often in big groups.
But exactly,
yeah.
It's you tend to run into random Italians in the middle of nowhere all over the world,
like my friend
a pizzeria or something.
A pizzeria in the middle of nowhere in South Africa. Yeah, it was quite funny. So when I lived near Sodwana Bay on the coast in South Africa, there was this Italian called Alessandro, and he had like a little trailer. The cops here, are they gonna pull us over? You know what we should do if they pull us over is just keep recording. Let's see if they're
come on.
Let's see if they
wave us down.
No, that would have been great. Imagine if we got like a bribe on recording a bribe. How much money do you have in your wallet? Oh, what's that? Is that kept wheat here. That's pretty cool. So I had this friend Alex. He had this like little caravan by the side of the road, and he made a pizza oven next to it. Totally illegal, no planning permission.
Really?
Yeah. And
South Africa's pretty chill about this.
Yeah, no, they're pretty chill. But he was really an institution, this guy, making pizzas by the side, real Italian pizzas in this little coastal town.
A surf town, right?
Yeah, but he was a surfer. Really funny dude. And on the last tour, one of the clients, her daughter was American, but had married a South African, and I guess it traveled a little bit, around South Africa, and they'd actually gone to Sodwana Bay and met this Italian, and we started talking about it. Yeah, and then so this this daughter of the one of the clients just on our last tour, she'd been to this town and met this Italian dude, and then I started talking about him, and she told her mother about it, and so it was like a huge coincidence.
He made an impression.
That's
crazy.
But the guy was just hysterical, you know, real, really Italian, always saying very funny things.
Are there any Alex utterances that you can share on the podcast? I can think of some that might not be appropriate.
Well, there's one. I don't know that you could. I think you could say that. So he said once, I think we were talking about food, and he started talking about how much he loved mayonnaise. And then he sort of thought for a while, and then he was thinking about all the other things that he liked most in life. And he came out with, I like coffee, sex, and mayonnaise. These were the things that he really loved in life.
The essential.
The things that were important to him. But he was a classic. Every time he went there, he would say something that was just hysterical. We were trying to explain to him once what a speedo was, and he didn't get it. And in the end, we just had to say, no, it's just like a normal swimming costume. And he said, oh, okay, yeah. All Italians, they wear their speedos.
So where I used to live, the northern tip of Madagascar, there's a big island there, Nusi Bay, that is, it's one of these enclaves of Italian lodges and Italian restaurants, and a lot of Italian tourists go there.
Right.
It's a funny thing about Italians as a nationality, they tend to go to places where other Italians go.
Yeah. Like, safety in numbers.
Germans seem to have this drive to go to the most esoteric places where they don't see any other foreigners. Italians want to kind of flock together. But there were these package tours that were sold for years that were sold to honeymooning couples. But they weren't individual tours. They were group tours.
Right.
So you'd get like 10 or 12 honeymooning couples all together. And you would see them going like very volubly walking down the main street of Diego.
All together. Really?
And then all these people had just been married. And it was just so funny. I thought to myself, there's no other nationality in the world where you could sell like group package honeymoon tours.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had a great time together. Like,
sure.
You'd see them in lodges at night. They would just be, like you describe it, your sister's place, you know, singing and laughing and drinking. And you kind of got the picture of like, yeah, that actually wouldn't be so bad.
You occasionally meet like an expat Italian, like, living somewhere. I seem to remember there was some kind of Italian restaurant somewhere on the tour in maybe in Majang?
Majanga.
Majanga, yeah.
Yep. Also in Tulliar, there was an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
Pizzeria.
But they would sort of just come for a vacation and meet a girl and just kind of stay and make a little Italian restaurant.
To me, that's the pattern of Italians around the world. You just kind of get randomly, you get one or two in some small town.
Yeah.
And then you get these big enclaves in certain places. There's a big one on the coast of Kenya, the town of Malindi.
Uh-huh.
It's huge. At least it used to be a huge Italian destination. There's been some security problems, I guess, on the coast of Kenya. I don't know if it's declined.
But gregarious. I think if you had to pick one word, I think probably gregarious would be.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't... I hate to generalize about people because I know there's lots of different individual Italians.
But we will.
Exactly. It doesn't seem to be a nationality where people are super keen to try other countries' cuisines. Like this, when Italians travel, they basically want to eat Italian
food. Got to be careful of this roundabout here. Sometimes there's carjackings.
Really?
Apparently. At nighttime.
Okay, I'm being careful.
Yep. Check out this dude here. He looks a little bit dodgy.
Well, they all look dodgy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some sense. Italians seem to have this sense of like superiority, certainly of like Italian cuisine. Like, why would you want to eat
Why would you want to eat anything else? It's like, yeah.
That's food. Don't Japanese have that a bit as well?
Yeah, it's like, no, Japanese always want to, and they don't think it's because they're Japanese and they're used to it. They think this is actually empirically good food, the superior. Best food. Yeah, that's why they like it.
You know, every single like higher end hotel in Asia that gets significant numbers of Japanese clients serves a Japanese breakfast in conjunction with all the other breakfasts, like Red Cap Lark.
This is Balfour, by the way, on the left. This is where we're going to come back to. This is where my wife is from, this town.
Ground zero.
Yep.
Sort of
farming town.
Yeah. So when my wife and I were traipsing around the Alps, at some point we left Italy, crossed into France. And, you know, France isn't bad. French certainly have high regard for France. Actually, France has a lot of the same virtues of Italy, right?
Yeah, a lot of places, those things we said about the Italians are probably also...
Definitely. A lot of places are beautiful. In some sense, people value just the quality of life over, let's say, the economy.
Or not blasting little birds out of bushes.
They're pretty good on the bird blasting, too.
Yeah, after a few wines.
But... after a couple days in France, we were just desperate to go back to Italy.
Were you really?
We had a completely flexible travel plan, and we were just like, let's go back to Italy. Okay. Just like drove back over the Alps back to Italy.
Really?
And like as soon as we were
getting... Buongiorno!
Yeah, buongiorno! Oh, it was... definitely kind of fell in love with Italy, so it's a place... we need to get back to, you know, maybe our 10-year anniversary or something. We'll go back to Italy.
It's quite romantic, eh?
It is. Yeah, we stayed in Firenze. In a wonderful little guest house just on an ancient cobbled street, just walking distance from, you know, all the incredible museums and plazas and the Duomo and all this stuff. And, it's just magical. Italians were really puzzled about the provenance of my wife.
Really?
They were very... And it's... they weren't very shy about asking either. Which is fun.
Did they have any ideas? Or they were just completely...
people had ideas that were all over the place.
Really?
They mentioned Asian countries.
She's Chinese.
Thailand. And then they even mentioned, like, Sicily? Like,
really?
Kind of like with the quizzical look, like, I don't know. Like,
maybe it's Sicily.
Yeah, yeah. You from Peru? No, Vietnam.
Madagascar. Bellissimo.
Madagascar. Okay. Yep.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Per la bambina. Great language.
It's a fun place. you speak any Italian?
You know, before I go anywhere, I always study a little bit. I just think it's just an insane proposition that I'm going to go to a country and not learn a few words of the language. Sure. I mean, it just seems ridiculous. So we were on one of these, I think, you know, learn Italian in 30 days little app or something like that. So we learned a little bit, but actually coming out with it and you can, you know, being good at Spanish, you can also kind of pick up quite a bit. But one of the things I kind of arrived with my son, and he had headphones in. We were on the train heading to my sister's place, and he had the headphones in, and he was playing this with this little app on his tablet and repeating these Italian phrases. He's quite a good mimicker, you know, and he's coming out with these things.
He's been multilingual from childhood, from birth.
But the Italians all sat in the things around, they just thought this was the best thing, and this little kid, and they're all smiling and saying, bambino.
Bambino.
Speaking Italiano.
Very good, very good.
Bene. Yeah, and they love kids, of course, as well, you know, that's another thing of...
little boy learning the best language in the world,
dressed beautifully in a little stylish leather jacket, hair all gelled up.
There's something to Italian fashion where, like, everyone is trying to look like a footballer.
Yeah, yeah. Could have your sort of collar turned up and kind of hair done nicely. And,
Yep. Now, it's, you know what? There's, as you know, there's quite a strong Italian influence in Argentina.
Yeah, sure.
And
yeah.
It was strong enough that when I used to see Argentinian backpackers in La Paz,
uh-huh.
I just know them immediately. They seem to have this kind of Italian-esque sense of style or attempted style.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this conversation leaves me with the sense that I often have of, like, my list of places I want to go never gets shorter. Like, I've been to Italy, but in no sense have I completed Italy, and I'd really like to go back there. A wonderful place. But we'll wrap up this episode with a natural sound of an Italian sparrow,
which is about the only bird that I saw well.
Yeah, we really were racking our brains to come up with something associated with Italy, with our experience in Italy. You just see remarkably few birds, but Italian sparrow, you can find it in these beautiful, picturesque, ancient villages. So it's quite representative. Yeah, thanks to all for listening, and catch you next week.